to move the needle, I think one of the first things we need to do is understand the personalization aspect of connection. What motivates our team as individuals? What motivates them as a team? What does empowerment look like? How do we connect the value of the work to the value to them? Because if somebody doesn't know why what they do every day matters, then why do they care about showing up to do it and putting more skin in the game? Looking at options for creativity. I want to go back to the communications piece. Transparency and honesty is such a huge piece to this. We're supposed to model the behavior that we want in an organization, but there's a lot of leaders, unfortunately, that do not have the skill set because they were put into the positions because, again, they fixed a widget or they created a thing. They don't know how to actually relate, connect, collaborate with other human beings in a way that's human and not just about being productive.
In her book, Conversational Intelligence, Judith Glasser wrote, "To get to the next level of greatness depends on the quality of our culture, which depends on the quality of our relationships, which depends on the quality of our conversations. Everything happens through conversations." Welcome to Conversations, powered by Quantivos. Welcome to this episode of Conversations. I'm Brian Gorman, your host and a coach here at Quantivos. And our guest today is Russell Lalliker. Russell is a relationships at work advocate. Welcome, Russell.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
What in the heck is a relationships at work advocate?
A relationships at work advocate is someone who believes we need to spend a lot more time understanding that we work with other humans. That it's not just about us, it's not just about them, it's that thing we're creating together. And in order to be able to create that thing together, we need to look at a bigger picture and see how we show up. And I'm advocating that we need to look at leadership a lot differently than maybe how some organizations define it. So advocacy is me not shutting up about it, Brian.
Okay. One of the models that our listeners are familiar with is Judith Glasser's model for building and sustaining trust. And trust is at the heart, I believe, of fundamentally every relationship and how much I'm willing to deliver, how much I'm willing to be candid, all of those kinds of things. And there is an acronym for her model. It's a neuroscience-based model. The acronym is TRUST. It's the acronym that I like because I see it and I know what it means. It's transparency, relationship, understanding, shared success, and telling the tough truths with candor and caring.
Sure.
And I really like this model because it encourages people, and I advocate as best I can as a coach for my clients to move out of role-to-role relationships into person-to-person relationships. One of the things you and I were talking about before I hit record was what hasn't changed about leadership as we have made and continue to make this move from more of an industrial age to a digital post-COVID age of organizational life.
What hasn't changed? It's so funny, we talk about this future of work all the time. And as you've mentioned, sort of moving from this industrial to this post-pandemic world that we're moving towards. And yet a lot of articles I read about what this future of work is all things people have wanted for the past two decades. It's like this future of work is just, oh, I hate meetings. I'm like, yeah, me too. I hate useless meetings. But somehow in this future of work, we've suddenly discovered that this is a new thing. It's like we haven't been listening to people enough as it is. So I think if we're talking about what hasn't changed, a couple of things. One, and I'm going to look at it from a positive and a negative standpoint, because I think we do a disservice by using words and not realizing there is a good and bad. Leadership is there. Trust. There's bad trust as well that I don't think gets talked about enough. But let's first talk about what hasn't changed. Definitions. And I think I've kind of alluded to that with what I'm saying is that we don't define things. And that doesn't seem to have changed at all. Even conversations I'm having day to day, is that we throw words out like innovation, diversity, leadership. We put it on a poster, throw it in an email, put it in a newsletter, and we don't ever define what that means. There's executives that are basically telling us that we need to be better leaders, and then we're coming into it thinking it's a Brené Brown, Simon Sinek definition of leadership, and they're looking at it going, did you fix my problem? Did you deliver a widget? It's the ends justify the means approach to leadership. While others are thinking, are you creating other leaders? Are you creating a safe, psychologically safe space? Both are important, but if we don't define them, what we're actually talking about here, then what really is success? So I think for things that aren't changing, that's one. Another thing that's not changed is that we're all human beings. Work is not our entire lives. So leadership needs to understand that there are far bigger impacts than just that 9 to 5, whatever your work day is, how flexible or inflexible it is that we are a whole person and that there is so much happening that is beyond our control. And that impacts how we show up, our mental health, our productivity. And as leaders, that hasn't changed. The pandemic certainly was the Uber version of how the world can impact our how we show up at work. But that has never been different than, say, a family member dies, or that we are dealing with, you know, we can't pay our rent. These are things that are impact us on a daily basis that as leadership, we need to understand that there is so much more to work than did you do that thing at a performance review.
I was actually thinking about this podcast yesterday. I had been maintaining a storage unit for a friend of mine who recently passed away. And so yesterday afternoon, I was meeting his son at the facility to turn the unit over to him. And his son was coming from New York City out into New Jersey. It wasn't quite clear when he was going to arrive there. And when I got to the office, the person on duty was about to close the office for lunch. Now, they didn't have lunch hours posted, so I was not excited about this. And then the property manager showed up. She had come in to pick up some packages. So I said, can you stay here and keep the office open? No. The policy is on Sundays, they only have one person on the time clock, so she's not allowed to punch in. If she can't punch in, she can't process any paperwork. And it said to me, there are certainly a lot of places, some very much more blue collar like this, but also white collar, where we are not treating people like people at work. How do we drive this change?
I think we have to understand that people are individuals. We talk about teams all the time, but a team is just made up of a number of individual people with challenges and motivations and what, you know, what gets them up in the morning and so forth. So I'm hearing that story. I'm hearing a few things. I'm hearing boundaries. I'm hearing bad communication. I'm hearing, like, there's so many aspects to a case study like that, that I think we need to not think that it is a checkbox exercise. Any fix is not us going, well, we did these three things. We fixed the problem. That's not how humans work. And that's not how cultures thrive or are destroyed. To move the needle, I think one of the first things we need to do is understand the personalization aspect of connection. What motivates our team as individuals? What motivates them as a team? What does empowerment look like? How do we connect the value of the work to the value to them? Because if somebody doesn't know why what they do every day matters, then why do they care about showing up to do it and putting more skin in the game? Looking at options for creativity. I want to go back to the communications piece. Transparency and honesty is such a huge piece to this. We're supposed to model the behavior that we want in an organization, but there's a lot of leaders, unfortunately, that do not have the skill set because they were put into the positions because, again, they fixed a widget or they created a thing. They don't know how to actually relate, connect, collaborate with other human beings in a way that's human and not just about being productive. So I think for us to really get this going, and I've got a few things I want to sort of highlight this, is that we treat trust as something special at work. We treat it like as soon as we turn our computer, we walk through that door, suddenly it's employee trust, leadership trust, trust-driven leadership. I'm like, my God, it is no different than friends you have or family members you have long relationships with. Where's your communication being effective or understanding that it's done over time or being consistent or making an effort, being honest? These are skills that we do with making a BFF from grade 7 and keeping that person a friend for 20, 30 years. And yet we think it's this special, amazing thing that we have to write reports about or checklists about at work. I think we have a problem putting barriers in our way of thinking it's something special when it's just about being a good human to create strong relationships with other good humans. We get in our own way.
As you look at the future of work, I know I have no idea where we're going to end up. What do you see as some of the most important characteristics of those who are calling the shots in terms of moving their organizations through this unknown and into the unknown?
I think the pandemic did a really good job of showing us who the good leaders and the bad leaders were, because most leaders are never challenged, ever. They just show up, do their work, and nothing that level ever showcases how good or great or bad they are. And I think to be prepared for the future of work, you have to be prepared for change, because if anything's accelerated since the pandemic is the change that's coming. In the future of work, that is the name of the game. And if you're just using words like resiliency, it breaks my heart, because that just means I can handle change. It doesn't mean you're a good human. It doesn't mean you understand the most imperative thing I think we need to be better at as leaders is communication, where we're being brutally honest. We're sharing things we probably necessarily shouldn't be sharing with our teams, traditionally should be sharing with our teams. Just being bold-faced, honest with them about why things aren't going to work, why things are the way they are, why you're going in a particular direction. I think if there's any skill set a leader of our future of work needs to have, it's unbelievably strong communication skills. I think LinkedIn even just did a report recently that executive or the hiring community has said communication is the number one skill set that people are going to need or want in the future to do this. And I think that's the main ingredient for any relationship, is being able to be communicative and understand that it's about the person, not about you. Communication is literally defined as a two-way thing, and everybody does broadcasting. They talk at, not with. And it hurts my heart that they think that that's when communication happens. An executive putting an email they didn't write out to the entire organization and go, look, I communicated. And I think another trait that people need to understand is effort matters, and small effort means the most. To illustrate, I've had conversations with leaders where they look at these big, grandiose engagement things like, oh, we need to do a conference. We need to get everybody together. We need to do a map out of what our culture is going to be. These huge exercises. But when you dig a little deeper, you realize they haven't done any of the little things. They've never, ever stopped by a cubicle to ask a person what they do or how their day is. They've never walked a particular floor before. They've never taken somebody out for lunch that is completely not in their hierarchy or org chart. They're not doing the little things that build the strong foundation that will make those big grand gestures meaningful. They're assuming those relationships already exist. They're assuming that there will be tons of value in this when none of the foundation of trust, relationship, familiarity has been. Of course, people want to be remote. They don't even know who their leaders are. They don't care to spend time with them face to face because they don't know them as human beings. They would rather be, you know, as far away from them as possible doing their work. So I think that is, if anything, those two things are huge when it comes to future work, is the communication and understanding effort consistent over time, all the time, is monumental. It's not calling your friends on their birthday. And I don't mean signing a letter that nobody has to come up with a new thing to say on a birthday card or a cake that you just show up to and they're like, oh, who is this for? I don't even know. Like real relationships. And we just don't seem to take the effort to do it. I think a recent guest on my own podcast said that community is probably the best word for future of work. If you want your organization to truly survive and be able to weather the change we have coming from all sides, it's community and building that community, true community.
I think I want to add two to that. The first is curiosity. Give up knowing that you know everything, because you don't, and everybody knows you don't. Too often, and I just was discussing this with another guest last week, too often we take those things that happen as anomalies rather than as signs that things are changing. Be curious. Don't dismiss what you don't understand.
Or don't agree with.
Or don't agree with. Absolutely. Be curious. The other, and it goes back to what you were saying about teams as a collection of people, organizations are collections of people. And I think I spent the vast majority of my career in organizational change management. It is founded on great principles, and there are a number of different methodologies behind it. The fatal flaw is that organizations don't change. People change. And organizational change is individual change at scale. And I think we need to bring much more of that recognition again of the individual person, even as the pace of change, the velocity of change, the disruption of change continues to grow. We need to be in touch with the individual in the organization.
But that's the danger of power, Brian. That's the danger of having moving up the ladder where so much so that your calendar is dictating who your identity is, as opposed to who you are as a person showing up. But you get so removed, and all you see is the processes that got you into your position of power. So you're happy to keep that system going because it worked for you. So why would you be open to change if that works? Incremental change, maybe, but big shifts? Oh no, that'll have to be a pandemic. Thank you very much. So it's that understanding of familiarity and saying we're open to change, but actually being open to change and knowing that it might not work for you, but it might work for somebody else is vital.
Russell, so what are the key messages as an advocate for relationships at work that you want everyone from the frontline leader on up to hear?
For me, it's understanding leadership has impact, good or bad, action or inaction. I ask a question on my show of my guests. First, it's always the first question I ask, which is, what's your best or worst employee experience? Most of them are bad. And the reason is, of course, those are the ones that people remember. Those resonate. Here's the reoccurring theme, though. They always seem to be from 20 or 30 years ago. Leaders don't understand that they are literally causing PTSD that people carry with them for decades that they still don't get over based on their actions or inactions. Leaders need to understand that they can use their power for good or evil, and it's really up to them to decide that. And how I like to break it down is I look at it from three levels, and I kind of break it down through air, land, and sea. So as a leader, here's how we can better understand impact. If we start with air, and air I sort of equate to the environment in which we work. And I don't mean the cultural environment. I mean the work-life environment. Pandemics, economic factors, political factors, anything that happens in home life that bleeds into their work life that we as leaders may not have any influence over. But as leaders, we damn well better understand and know it because those are the people we work with on a personal level and that may not be bringing 100% today. And here's why, and that is okay. They're 100%, maybe 25% today, but that's because their uncle died that they were really close to. So we have to understand the air. I remember doing this exercise. I filled out a presentation. There were, I think, 9 things that were happening in the world, nothing to do with work. They were absolutely instrumental to how people showed up and were thinking and feeling that day. And I'm like, and this is only Tuesday. Like, what's tomorrow? But as a leader, we need to get that. Then you move to the next level, which is the land. And that I see as the culture of the organization. That is how people are rewarded based on their behaviors, how communication works, how truth to power actually shows up. It's the reality of the organization and our influence as leaders on the good or the bad of it. Are we modeling behavior? Are we not modeling behavior? How we communicate? How does our team react to that communication? It's very much here. Now there's the sea level, which I like to go below the surface, which is us. And I think the biggest superpower we can have as leaders is self-awareness and understanding who we are, how we react to anger, how we react to criticism and feedback, how we value and use our time, how we manage our time. And I think if we can look at those three levels and understand that they interlock and work together, we can get a better understanding through check-ins of how our impact can be and not be with our organizations. So if anything you take away from relationships is your relationship with the world, the culture, and ourselves, if you get that, I think you're on your way.
One of the things that I have become very aware of the last few years is vertical development. And yet, which for those of you who aren't familiar with it, really is the maturation of the individual from the, this is all about me at the early stages of vertical development to, if you think at the extreme other end of the spectrum, the Desmond Tutus and Mahatma Gandhis as leaders. Most leadership development programs, most training and development programs still focus on horizontal development. These are the skills. To me, those skills can't have their impact unless you are also maturing as a leader. How do we drive more vertical development in our organizations?
Well, I mean, you're speaking to my heart, Brian, because I can't tell you how much more mindset matters over tactics. And yet the first thing they'll go is, what are my takeaways? What are my actionables? Like, what as a leader, what's my homework? What can I focus on? I'm like, if your mindset isn't right, you're not going to do those things anyway. How many conferences do people go to and get so inspired, then they come back to their gray office, maybe have a couple of ideas, and then it peters off after 2 days. And their employees roll their eyes going, oh, great, did Sally go to another conference? Well, this will be fun for a week. It's just, it doesn't move the needle. And so I love that you brought that up. I think it comes back to curiosity. I think it's fostering that curiosity in our leaders and understanding the benefit of being curious and in being outside of themselves and being curious and seeing the impact that they have or don't have. People need to be inspired to want to change, to understand that the impacts they have real consequences. And I think the problem is that leadership is all about responsibility and it's not about accountability. We'll take responsibility any day of the week because that allows us to take credit for successes and kind of hide when there's a failure. Accountability is, did you create new leaders? No? Yes? Here's your reward or punishment based on that. We're not going to promote you if you don't create other leaders. But I finished this program. I created a widget. Don't care. That's half the job. But we make that the job. We make that the reward. So you get promoted. We don't spend enough and equal time on mindset challenges. When we look for references, leaders look for their colleagues or previous bosses. Nobody goes to the team they just led and go, would you hire this leader? How did they impress you? How did they make your life better? How did they remove challenges? How did they help with your professional development? How are they curious about you and your motivations and your values? If they're like, yeah, none of that, then that's not a leader. And we need to stop calling that person a leader. They are just a supervisor or a manager that's good with check boxes. So whole cultures need to understand that accountability is the road to leadership, not just responsibility.
Russ, I'm going to have to wrap it up. Any last thoughts to share with our audience?
I am a big fan of leaders and a big fan of leadership. And unfortunately, a lot of us are set up to fail, because people are put in leadership positions in their late 20s, early 30s, or even before that. And most training programs don't seem to happen to your 40s or late 40s. So I know there is amazing leadership happening in spite of some of the cultures they work within. So I love that leadership is still trying, even if they're not getting the support they need. They're still looking for programs like yours, like mine, to help them with their professional development that have to do their own self-leadership. But organizations have to take their part in this too. It's a dual role of responsibility. If we want better leadership, we have to take this on ourselves, but we also have to hold organizations' feet to the fire and demand more of what they define leadership as. Look at me making it go full circle back to definitions.
Russell Lalliker, Relationships at Work Advocate, thank you for this conversation.
Absolutely my pleasure. Thanks for having me.